Jaffa cakes. Jaffa cake misshapes. So what can you do with them? Well, you can eat them. But you could say, well, they're misshaped, so we don't want them, so we'll throw them in the bin. Or you could open the packet, and you could look at them, and you could laugh at them, and you could say, well, look what this one looks like, and you could make some comment about how they look. And then you could just leave them on the side and let them go mouldy and not bother with them. But Jaffa cakes are made to be eaten. And we can eat them later downstairs. But the point is that Jaffa cakes are made to be eaten, and even if they're misshapes, if they're odd, they've still got a purpose, and that purpose is to be eaten. And there's no point in rejecting something just because it isn't how it's supposed to look. That's because they were made with a purpose. Right, Matthew chapter 4, verse 18. And walking by the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who was called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And he said to them, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. And they immediately left the nets and followed him. And going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, in the boat with Zebedee, their father, mending their nets, and he called them. And they immediately left the boat and their father and followed him. So the disciples immediately left the nets and followed Jesus. It's about 25 years ago now that Linda and I first moved down to Abergavenny. And I've no doubt we moved to Abergavenny for a reason. And I knew at the time we were moving for a reason. When we moved there, Linda didn't know very much about Abergavenny. To me, it was too close to home for comfort. And I didn't really want to live there. And I was quite reluctant about moving. And yet, this idea came that we should move there. And it was something I didn't have to pray about too much. I just knew it was the right thing to do. And since then, life's been quite a roller coaster for about 25 years. But I still believe that we moved there for a reason and it was the right thing to do. It's certainly been eventful over the last 25 years. And at the time we moved down, we were putting greetings cards into shops and workplaces in the around the valleys. So we got to visit a lot of Valley's towns. And a few months ago when Dave was introducing Phil Gibson, when Phil was going to speak, Dave made some comment about where Phil came from, and it was down in Cross Keys direction somewhere, and it, as if it was down from here. Well, of course, it is down from here, I suppose, altitude-wise, But I remember a time when I was looking down on Cross Keys, and I'd had a sandwich break, and my favourite place to stop was up on a hill. Thanks. On a hill above Cross Keys. And as I was looking down on the town, I was thinking about a letter that I'd just been reading. And it was a letter that had been written by an old preacher. And he was living in Santa Barbara, California, which is very nice. And he'd written this letter to an old lady who lived just outside Abergavenny at on a farm at Lentilio Patholi. And what had happened, my understanding is the old lady had tracked this preacher down and written to him. This was in the days before the internet and email, so she'd had to write to him. And he'd replied, and in the letter he was reminiscing about his days when he was young, back in the 1930s, and he was holding evangelistic meetings in some chapels along the border in the Black Mountains, and he was reminiscing about the people he knew, and they were people that I knew as old people, but to him they were young, and he was talking about the days when he was young. But that letter was written about 25 years ago now. The old preacher's passed on. The lady he was writing to had passed on. But I was thinking about this letter when I was looking down on Cross Keys. Because this old preacher, he'd had a life. He'd ended up living in Santa Barbara, looking out over the Pacific, very nice. But he was actually from Cross Keys. It's where he had started his life, and he'd started as a miner in Cross Keys. But then he'd become an evangelist, and he travelled around the world. And I think he started in Barrie Island, but he went on from there to places like Australia, New Zealand, South Africa. And he had a good surname. His surname was Powell, like the best of people. He used to call himself Evangelist Ivor Powell, the man from Wales. And I grew up hearing this man, about this man, and I always envisaged him as an old man. But then I realized he was actually quite young in the days when people I knew had known him. But the fact was that I knew a lot of people who, when they were young, had come to know Jesus through this man's ministry. He was called the man from Wales. And people would think, oh, he's from Wales, Welsh revival, you know. But what struck me when I read the letter was what if he hadn't moved? What if he'd stayed at home? What if he'd never answered the call that God had put on his life? What if he'd never left Cross Keys? I could think of two men. I knew they were older when I knew them. But when they were young lads, they'd grown up in homes where alcohol had been an issue. And yet when I knew these two, they were very strict teetotalers. I wouldn't preach teetotalism, but it was what they did, and a mold was broken, and their own kids grew up having a much better life and a much better childhood than they'd had. That's just one outcome. And so this man, this evangelist, was the man from Wales, and not the man in Cross Keys. But if you're from somewhere, it doesn't necessarily mean that that somewhere is a bad place. And being called somewhere doesn't necessarily mean having to move to California. Though it sounds quite nice, but the place where you are can be a good place. You don't have to move house, move town, move country. But following Jesus does involve leaving something behind. And not just following Jesus to become a Christian, but following Jesus into where he wants us to be. It doesn't necessarily mean moving from one place to another, and it doesn't necessarily mean anything really dramatic. And I'm sure that there were plenty of people, and the right thing for them was to be a miner in Cross Keys and to stay there. And I would imagine that would be quite a challenge. Down on the coal face, people would see what you were really made of. And for some people, that would be the right place. But hearing from God involves, following Jesus involves hearing and finding. Hearing from God and finding your purpose in life. It might be down the coal mine, but living in a very different way. And it might be moving somewhere else. William Barclay, the theologian, he said, there are two great days in a person's life, the day we are born and the day we discover why. There are two great days in a person's life, the day we are born and the day we discover why. And those misshapen Jaffa cakes were made for a purpose. They were made for a purpose. They were made to be eaten. They aren't perfect. But it's not the right thing to put them in the bin just because they're not perfect. And it's not the right thing to just take them out of the packet, laugh at them because they're different, laugh at them because they're odd, and just leave them to go moldy. It's not what they were made for. They were made to be eaten. I think one mistake we make when we read the Gospels, that we can make, is to assume that we get the whole picture, because we don't. There's not enough in the Gospels to cover the whole of Jesus' 3 years of ministry. What we get in the Gospels is revelation from God of the life of Jesus. It's like a series of scenes in Jesus' life. And at the end of John's Gospel, John tells us that there are many more things that Jesus did than what are in the Gospels. But we get enough. We get the revelation that we need from them. But then when we read this scene of Peter and the other disciples by the Sea of Galilee. Peter was by the lake, he was mending his nets. It'd be lovely to think he was going about his everyday life normally, and then Jesus suddenly appears out of the blue and calls him, and he follows, and he never goes back to the nets. But this doesn't seem to be the whole story. This is when Peter follows Jesus. And he leaves his nets. But this scene takes place after John the Baptist had been arrested, but before John the Baptist was executed. And John the Baptist had been a popular preacher. He'd attracted crowds to the River Jordan to be baptized. He'd preached a message challenging people to change their lives, to live right. And he made enemies in high places. He was quite a radical. He unsettled people. He was popular. He was successful. And then he made the wrong enemies, and he was arrested. And eventually he was executed. But when at this point in the story, John is still in prison. What we find in John's Gospel is that Peter had been a disciple of John the Baptist, and John chapter 1, verse 35. Again, the next day, John was standing with two of his disciples, and he looked upon Jesus as he walked and said, "Behold, the Lamb of God." And the two disciples heard him speak, and they followed Jesus. And Jesus turned and beheld them following and said to them, "What do you seek?" And he said to them, "Rabbi," which translated means teacher, "where are you staying?" He said to them, "Come and you will see." They came therefore and saw where he was staying, and they stayed with him for that day, for it was about the 10th hour. One of the two who heard John speak and followed him was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother. He found first his own brother Simon and said to him, "We have found the Messiah," which translated means Christ. He brought him to Jesus. Jesus looked at him and said, "You are Simon, the son of John. You shall be called Cephas, which is translated Peter. Peter had followed John the Baptist. So Jesus, when he was mending his nets by the Sea of Galilee, he wasn't just where he'd always been. He'd been a disciple of John. So he wasn't just some fisherman's son who'd never been away from another experience of the world, never been away from his dad's fishing boat. I don't think that's the whole story. So they'd followed Peter and his friends, they'd followed John, they'd followed his uncompromising message. John was rocking the boat. They were fishermen. They'd been told never rock the boat. And John must have been a kind of hero, the sort of person these young lads would have been attracted to. And then John was preaching this message of getting reconciled to God, and we can imagine that God was working in their lives and drawing them to him through John's preaching. And it's here that Peter and Andrew, while they're following John, they first encounter Jesus. But then John, their hero, gets arrested. So what do you do when your hero's gone? You go back home. You go back home to Dad. You go back home to the fishing boats. You'd followed your popular leader and he'd let you down. He'd given them hope. He'd given them purpose. He'd given them life away from the fishing boats, away from the Sea of Galilee. He preached a message about getting right with God, but then it had all come crashing down. So what do? You go back home to Dad. And Peter's at the Sea of Galilee. And Jesus comes and he says, follow me. If you follow me, it's going to change your life. But Peter had already followed this man of God, John the Baptist. He'd responded to John's message. He'd seen John draw the crowds. He'd seen John become really popular and impact people with his message. But he'd seen John get arrested. And then John was there waiting to be executed. So Peter goes home, he's devastated, but then he follows Jesus. Jesus calls him and he responds. And he sees Jesus drawing the crowds, but then he sees Jesus getting arrested. And then in John 18, we find when Jesus is arrested, Peter's devastated. He's cursing, he's swearing. He's denying that he knows Jesus. I don't know this man. And we can understand why Peter was doing that, because he'd been there before. He'd already followed John the Baptist. He'd already been disappointed. But then Jesus comes along. And Jesus seems to promise so much. But again, he's arrested. And Jesus, too, gets put to death. But it's not the whole story, because Jesus doesn't stay dead. And in John 21, we've got the story where Peter's back. He's back again on the boat on the Sea of Galilee. Again, he's gone back to his boat. And he's been fishing all night and he's not caught anything. But when Jesus comes to him this time, it's the Jesus who's conquered death. Yeah, you've seen both the two people you followed die, but I'm back. And it's then Peter encounters the risen Jesus. We can imagine sometime around about, I don't know, probably 8 AD, the town of Capernaum on the Sea of Galilee. Jonah the fisherman is sitting down at the table across from Mrs. Jonah, the fisherman's wife. He says something like, well, the boys are getting older now. You'll have to let them go. They need to learn the trade. I'm going to take them out on the boat tonight. They need to learn to fish. Mrs. Jonah, the fisherman's wife, thinks in her heart, my babies. But she's known this time was coming. So that night, Jonah, the fisherman, takes his boys, Peter and Andrew, and teaches them to fish. We can imagine the scene in the boat, the induction day, the health and safety. So Jonah says, this is the fishing boat, and this is a net. And that out there is the Sea of Galilee. And there are two rules. One, don't rock the boat. The boat is your security on the water. Keep it still. Move slowly and keep it balanced. Don't rock the boat. Rule two, The boat's your security. Never, ever leave the boat. I'm your father, and I am telling you, never, ever, ever leave the boat. It's your security when the sea's rough. Cling to it even if it looks to be sinking. It is all you have in a rough sea. It is your only hope of survival, and don't let anyone ever tell you anything different. We know, as Peter was a bit impulsive, his father probably knew he was a bit impulsive. Peter would open his mouth before he thought things through. He would chop off someone's ear without really thinking of the consequences. So old Jonah the fisherman was careful to make Peter listen and understand. He would not want to go home to tell Mrs. Jonah, the fisherman's wife, that Peter had gone overboard. Don't rock the boat. I'll never, ever leave the boat, Peter. The life that Peter had as a fisherman wasn't an easy one. The work would have been hard. They would have been scruffy, used to cursing away on the boats. But they would have been used to meeting all sorts of people with the selling the fish they caught. They were good at maths, probably, doing figures, selling fish. The fishermen who owned boats would probably get a bigger share of the profits. It looks as if the disciples owned boats and employed people, so maybe the work was rough. But maybe they weren't the poorest of people out there. But they did leave rough, hard work. They would have been used to mail company, working in a gang, physically tough, used to danger. Storms would come suddenly and violently over Galilee. Storms could catch fishermen by surprise. Waves could capsize boats. Don't rock the boat and never leave the boat. Well, it was a lifestyle that you could spend your whole life in. There was no reason to leave. People would always need to be fed. They needed the fish. If you just kept fishing and you never rocked the boat and you never left the boat, there'd be no need to leave the boat. It would be your security. People would keep coming back. People would need the fish because they would need the food. There wouldn't seem to be anything very wrong with that. But follow me, says Jesus, and I will make you fishers of men. Follow me. Don't be a fisherman. Be a fisher of men. And then we get the scene in Matthew 14 where Peter listens to the voice of Jesus and he quite literally steps out of a boat and walks on the water. And he wouldn't have done that if he'd stayed a fisherman. So what would you leave behind? Well, you'd leave behind conforming to the people around you, being like everyone else. The fishermen would have worked together. There would have been a kind of gang mentality. They would have been used to trusting one another with their lives and trusting that no one was ever going to rock the boat and put them in danger. But Peter rocked the boat when he walked away. That can make people uneasy. Standing out from the crowd, doing something different. You're not one of us then. What makes you so special? You think you're better than we are. Walking away from the bad stuff. Maybe just being the fisherman who doesn't curse as much. Or maybe leaving the boat altogether. Not conforming with the people around you. Leaving behind other people's hopes and plans and expectations. You can't live to please other people. You try and live your life pleasing other people and you're going to be disappointed and you're going to waste your life. Other people will pour their own hopes and dreams into your life, and sometimes they will pour their own negativity into your life. Maybe thinking of the misshapen Jaffa cake. What use is a misshapen Jaffa cake? It'll never achieve anything. No one would want to eat it. Maybe old Jonah the fisherman who worked long and hard to get a family boat to get some security for his kids and grandkids. But his boys walk away from it. Do we have ambitions for our children that we don't want them to walk away from? Have people ever had ambitions for us that we've walked away from? Are the family traditions that we've been expected to follow? There's always that expectation that the next generation will do better than the previous one. But maybe we've had negativity poured into us, negative expectations we need to break free from. Maybe your family's got a history of bad habits. My family's got a history of bad habits and good ones as well. But mostly I've been told about the bad ones. If you break the mold, if you rock the boat, who do you disappoint? We cannot please everyone. We waste our lives trying to please everyone. Some people will never be satisfied, no matter how much you try to please them. Your life is more than the hopes and dreams and expectations of other people. Your life is more than the good expectations people have of you. But it's also more than the bad ones as well. Because we're all unique. We're all in a particular set of circumstances. It's the old song from Sunday school, "You in your small corner and I in mine." And that's not me in your corner, and that's not you in mine. We cannot be in anyone else's corner. But we have a place in the world. So we leave behind other people's hopes and plans. We leave behind the disappointment of previous experience. Because Peter and his mates had followed John the Baptist. And it didn't seem like they'd done the right thing. Because they were back on the boats and their leader was locked up and he was really on what we call death row these days. And it would have been easy for them to think, well, I'm not making that mistake again. Maybe there was something lingering. Well, that message was good and yeah, we do need to get right with God. And maybe some of that was still lingering in their lives. Maybe they just thought, oh God, I tried that one. Don't want anything more to do with God. But then Jesus comes and he says, follow me. And they walk away from that disappointment. So you can leave behind conforming with the people around you. And what you will find is belonging. You can walk away from other people's hopes and plans, but you'll find identity. And you can walk away from the disappointment of previous experience and find love. Instead of conforming, you find belonging. Instead of other people's hopes and plans, you find identity. And instead of the disappointment of previous experience, in Jesus, you find love. The theologian Tom Wright, in his book Surprised by Hope, wrote these words. They jumped out at me when I first read them. What you do in the Lord is not in vain. You are not oiling the wheels of a machine that's about to roll over a cliff. You are not restoring a great painting that's shortly going to be thrown on the fire. You are not planting roses in a garden that's about to be dug up for a building site. You are, strange though it may seem, almost as hard to believe as the resurrection itself, accomplishing something that will become in due course part of God's new world. Every act of love, gratitude, and kindness, every work of art or music inspired by the love of God and delight in the beauty of his creation, every minute spent teaching a severely handicapped child to read or to walk, every act of care and nurture, of comfort and support for one's fellow human beings, and for that matter, one's fellow non-human creatures, and of course, every prayer, all spirit-led teaching, every deed that spreads the gospel, builds up the church, embraces and embodies holiness rather than corruption, and makes the name of Jesus honored in the world. All of this will find its way through the resurrecting power of God into the new creation that God will one day make. What you do in the Lord is not in vain. Just to finish, if you'd like to close your eyes, just for a moment. I'd just like to read out some words that you may recognize. And just read them out as a declaration and as a prayer. You may well recognize these words. I keep fighting voices in my mind that say I'm not enough. Every single lie that tells me I will never measure up. Am I more than just the sum of every high and every low? Remind me once again just who I am, because I need to know. You say I am loved when I can't feel a thing. You say I am strong when I think I am weak. You say I am held when I am falling short. When I don't belong, you say I'm yours, and I believe what you say of me. The only thing that matters now is everything you think of me. In you I find my worth. In you I find my identity. You say I am loved when I can't feel a thing. You say I am strong when I think I am weak. You say I am held when I am falling short. When I don't belong, you say I am yours, and I believe what you say of me. Taking all I have, and now I'm laying it at your feet. You have every failure, God, and you'll have every victory. You say I'm loved when I can't feel a thing. You say I'm strong when I think I'm weak. You say I'm held when I'm falling short. When I don't belong, you say I'm yours, and I believe what you say of me. Amen.